So, Brad, what is your relationship with puzzles?
I really love puzzles in terms of like mystery and like thinking about like how things fit together, and when things like fit together correctly or in a way that seems satisfying to me, it's like one of the best feelings ever for me. And I feel like that's definitely puzzles in general. I am not the hugest fan of like puzzles that you like
Jigsaw
jigsaw
puzzles.
puzzles. I don't like hate jigsaw puzzles, but recently in our house, we had a jigsaw puzzle out for like 6 months because it was like a pretty difficult puzzle. And it took, I didn't really work on it very much. So the other people who were working on it just took forever. And I was like, can we please finish this puzzle and get it out of here? And so maybe I have a slight negative vibe towards puzzles right now. But as a general mystery, puzzles, the idea of putting things together is like super exciting to me. What about you?
I think it's interesting that when you talk about puzzles, most people's first perception, I think, goes to jigsaw puzzles.
Right.
I don't have that same problem, seeing as I have little kids in my house and puzzles can't like stay on a table for like more than a day. So very limited. If I want to do a jigsaw puzzle, my wife do it sometimes, but we need like 300 piece puzzle, like do it in a sitting,
Yeah,
get it out of
the one that
there.
we had was like a custom made 2,000 piece puzzle that was not very easy to distinguish color variations and stuff like that. It was a really cool, it's a one piece puzzle that our roommate loves one piece, and so I made this custom thing. It was actually really cool, and I was very much into it at the very end, finishing the puzzle. It's funny how that is, like finding the pieces and putting the final pieces together is like super rewarding, but that big slog after you get the edges is different. So anyways, you were talking about not jigsaw puzzles, so go back
No,
into
I was
that.
getting into I think it's interesting in that I would describe most board games as puzzles. But the beauty of it is you have, your designer who is giving you all of the pieces to work with, all the different mechanics and components that oftentimes don't give you that same jigsaw puzzle feeling, but makes you feel potentially really smart or really dumb, depending on how well your game is going. And I love all that aspect. Like, board gaming is a big part of my life. And I think that reason of like trying to drill down into the strategy aspects of it, or like these puzzles on larger scales. And then when you have multiple people, you're like the game itself is giving you puzzles, but then you're also trying to read the room and figure out different people's strategies and different people's tendencies and how you can work together to bolster both of you or backstab somebody. And so that aspect of puzzles I really love. And we're getting into talking about a puzzle video game, and I feel like puzzle games are something I have enjoyed, but it's not like my typical go-to for video games. Would you have a similar feeling towards that, or?
I'm not super like, if I hear that a game is a puzzle game, it's not something that's like, ooh, I need to like do that. But whenever I'm actually playing a puzzle game, I very much so enjoy it. And I think it's very similar to what you're talking about with board games, where they are puzzles in terms of like I'm trying to figure out my path to victory in the board game. It has that same type of feeling, and it's like, instead of putting together a puzzle that has one correct way of putting the puzzle together, or maybe this game is a one correct way to put the puzzle together, but there are intricacies, and like you could put the pieces of the puzzle together in different ways to get unique things that maybe weren't even intended by the developer of the game. And that's one of the things that I love. I love like, I don't know if we talked about it in the podcast before, but like my favorite board game is called Twilight Imperium, and there are 26 different unique like factions like that play the game differently, and just the way that those things work together and how they play off each other is something that you can't fully test. And I think that's super, super interesting. Video games are a little bit different because they're a little bit more on rails than a board game is, in terms of just like they code certain things in, and there might be exploits that you could find, but I don't know. There's a little bit different. It's different interacting in the real world. And you even mentioned this a little bit. I feel like the idea of social puzzles is a super interesting thing. Just like you're not even playing a game necessarily, but it's just like you're interacting with your world. And you are essentially putting together the social puzzle of all the friends and people that you're interacting with. And you're seeing how those things mesh and what picture it makes when you put the certain things together. Welcome back to IndieQ. Today, we are talking about the game Cocoon. Paul, would you give us a little bit more background on this game?
So, Cocoon, as you can guess, is a puzzle game. The mechanics of it are a little bit tricky to explain. Basically, you're this, like, insect-type creature, and you're interacting in this world that has these, like, orbs, these marbles that each have their own world inside of them. And they are associated with the world. They have a special power associated with each orb. And there's like a boss at the end of each world. And so there's a lot of like these portals that let you jump into orbs and bring orbs with you into other orb worlds. And there's just the puzzle mechanic of like, how do I progress to the next phase? And then there's also, I think there's very big, just like this visual storytelling. Mm-hmm. There's no dialogue in the game, but there's a lot of like really cool geometry and like, I don't know if it's like, it's like a weird mix of like geometry and biology and like just this visual storytelling that is very alien.
Yeah.
And how the world is traversed. And how you are getting from point A to point B. It's not necessarily in the gameplay aspect, but it's like you finished a puzzle and you're like getting transported on a moving platform to the next level. It is oftentimes this very intricate, enjoyable, could be a little bit freaky depending on, you know,
the content.
What stuff icks you out.
Oh, yeah.
I feel like some people wouldn't, you know, I think it's very beautiful and exciting and cool. But I could see certain people like, this is not my style of, they might view it as, I don't know,
the
body horror.
The opposite of cute in some, it's funny because I didn't really feel that, like, any grossness. It was just like, oh, I'm just in this world that is very different than the way that our world looks. But I'm sure that people could potentially feel that way. One of the things I would add to that, and maybe this is because we just played Fury, and it's like the dash and the shoot and the attack and the parry and have all these different mechanics. This game, you can move and you can hit the interact button, like just like your action button. That's the entirety of your kit. And that pressing the A button will pick up an orb, put down an orb, enter into this new like world, or exit, like using the portal to jump back out of the world, or to push the little button to make the moving platform move. And I feel like it was almost a little bit jarring that we did that. So like, it's like so...
the juxtaposition is very strong between the two games in back-to-back episodes.
So I just thought that was super interesting. And I feel like the orbs are such a cool, unique feature of this game. Obviously, it's the first thing that you went to. I've never really seen anything utilize something like these orbs that are like a world or a place that you can enter into and exit out of. I just think that it was really cool.
For me, I know you haven't played it, but it gave me a lot of vibes of like how it feels to play Portal. You kind of have to get in a mindset of like, this is the physics of the world. These are how the world interacts, and like train your brain to think in ways that aren't necessarily your normal intuitive way of thinking. And so you kind of have to train yourself. And so I feel like by the time you get towards the end of the game, you have completely learned the language of the game. And in just like in Portal, you have to like, okay, you have like these theories of like, oh, this is how this puzzle is going to be solved. You have to orchestrate it. It's not anything that is like skill based, which is the nice thing about puzzle games is it's like, if you're not someone who has quick reflexes or is going to be, you know, have the highest skill scene, it works with backseat gamers. It's just like you kind of create this theory of how I'm going to accomplish this goal. And I'm curious, how difficult did the puzzles feel to you?
none of them were ever super, like, out there, especially because of the way that the game is paced. The beginning of the game, which I think that this game does a great job of just dropping you into the world. There's no tutorials, no, like, this is how you interact with the world. It's literally just drops you in, and there's just, like, an obvious thing to go do. And so it teaches you to, like, press those interactable buttons and pick up the orb, and then you start figuring these different pieces out. So as time is progressing, it's adding new layers and new layers and new layers. So it's like super simple puzzling at first. If you were to be thrown into this game like halfway through the game, at right off the bat, you'd probably be like, I don't understand what's going on. I don't know what I'm doing, what this like this new piece of the puzzle is. But because of the way that the game is paced, I never thought that something was like super difficult. Also, my brain just works with puzzles, like these types of things. It just, I love figuring it out, or like even running through different ideas of how I could get to the end and then have that thing be squashed and be like, oh, that's not how you do it. I gotta backtrack and figure it out. The way that the game is set up, you're never like going super duper far and being like, oh, I need to backtrack for like a significant amount of time. You'll walk into an area and it will like block you off. You can't exit the area anymore. It's like, oh, I have everything I need in order to complete this puzzle right here with me. And I thought that that's really nice. The times that I was stuck, I was like, I'm actually stuck. I can't go back. So I know that I'm in the right place and I can figure this out.
I really appreciate that about this game. I think it was, like you say, it's really cool. Like just the way that it visually presented, and you were like in this small area each time, made it so there's a couple times where I felt I was getting stuck and I'm like, I'm not interacting with this element that is very clearly
part of the puzzle.
And so it makes you like, okay, how can I interact with that? Because I don't know this to be certain, but it feels like there is a set solution to everything.
It seems like it.
And so it's like, okay, these are the pieces that I am given. I need to utilize every single piece. Every piece must be used. And in doing so, it kind of, the puzzle is figuring out, okay, how do I make it so that this can become part of the solution?
Right.
I felt like it really limited the overwhelming feeling that sometimes puzzle games can give you. To just like, okay, how do I work? You gotta touch every piece. How can I use that to help me solve the puzzle?
Right.
And then does a really good job of making you feel clever.
Mm-hmm.
The simplicity of it though, there is certain times where like your character can feel like he's walking a little bit slow.
Right.
Or like you need to pick up and put down orbs in certain area, or you need certain orbs inside of other orbs to do the certain thing correctly. And so there's like, oh man, I'd messed this one little part up and now I need to jump into three different orbs to pull a specific orb, jump back out, place it on a pedestal, and then like repackage like your Russian nesting dolls in the correct order to then go do the puzzle.
Right.
Which is, it was never like rage inducing, but every once in a while I was just like, man, I know I screwed this up and I have to take it. Knowing what to do, but just knowing that it takes a little bit of time to jump into each orb, move them around, place them in the right spot. Because you can't just like drop an orb. You have to like have it be on a orb pedestal, which is also part of the, okay, there's only two pedestals. So I know that the third orb I can't put down. I need to use one of the orbs at all times. Goes into the
well-crafted.
The well-crafted, it doesn't make the difficulty, the difficulty ramps up.
For sure.
But it's, like you said, I think it's this very steady, learn as you go, just through emerging gameplay.
Yeah. Did you have any particular puzzles that made you feel especially smart?
I think the game as a whole made me feel just clever. Okay. I wouldn't feel like especially smart at any point. Did you have any?
There was one puzzle that I figured out like very, very quickly, and it was utilizing like all four. I don't know if it was all four or it was a three, but it was like you had to like, I don't want to like tell people how to do it, but it's essentially when you're shooting the thing through multiple orbs and
out them. Oh, yes.
And
those were fun puzzles.
Like, I just thought that the way that each of the orbs, because each different colored orb has a different power, where one allows you to walk on invisible bridges, one like allows you to like zoom up and down through these like vertical shafts, and then the white one allows you to shoot at these things that will activate something. And so there was one puzzle like that, and I was like, I know exactly what to do. And I did it right the very first time, and I was just like, I'm so good. I feel so smart. But yeah, I just loved the simplicity and how all the puzzle pieces could build on each other in a way that was like very satisfying, but also the game is really beautiful. I loved the way that this game looked. We didn't even mention this, but this was a birthday present.
Yes.
For Paul. So David and I got this game for Paul for his birthday, and I just seen a couple little tidbits of it, just the way it looked, and I was like, this seems like a really fun game. It's made by the same developer as something else we played.
Not on the podcast. We played Inside and there's another game that I'm blanking on. That's the same developer.
I don't know, but anyways, I very much so enjoyed those aspects of the game. So
I'm curious, was there any like media out there that like the way that the game played or the visuals like sparked you to think about?
Not anything that's super well known. The main thing that popped into my head was Bug Fables, which is another indie game that I got for Christmas a number of years ago. And it's just because it's also bug themed. I feel like Bug Fables is much more like
a Paper Mario clone,
yeah. But where
it's been on our list to do for the podcast for a long time, but it's just
we haven't. It's eluded us so far. But that's one. What about you?
One of the things that I really thought of when playing is in not so much the books, but the movie version of Ender's Game, the like bug alien creatures. They have a very similar just.
Geometry stuff,
but just like the way that the world felt, just it made me think of Ender's Game. But another thing that kind of triggered back and forth with that was I found it very interesting how alien it felt, but they still, I feel like they kind of tried to ground it in like your bug character is vaguely humanoid,
right? It's almost like he has hands to move things
and he's walking. And I think it's interesting how. I don't know about you, but I feel like there's a degree of connection to something that you want to be able to see yourself in it. And I feel like a lot of games do that and give you a protagonist or a character that you can place yourself in.
They're personified in some way.
For sure. But then I feel like this game, it gave a little bit of that, but it also was just so alien and like a lot of stuff... In the transitions, not necessarily in the puzzles themselves.
Yeah.
But the puzzles reinforce that in the sense of you having to think differently.
Yeah.
But a lot of like my expectations of like what a thing was doing would often be subverted, and then you'd like go into this vista of all of this. It wasn't like mechanical, but sometimes it felt like assembly line-y, but it had like a biological component to it, and like just I feel like. We are bombarded with a lot of, like, rectangles and squares, and, like, we like our walls, and, you know, in this world, it did not have, it felt way more organic.
That's a great word, organic. It's interesting, like, even as you're talking about geometries and organic and biology and all those words, like, it makes me think of just, like, how nature, like plants grow, and, like, the... I don't know if you've ever watched, like, YouTubes or whatever on, like, the angles which seeds are being formed in, like, a sunflower seed. And, like, there's a very specific spiral.
Fibonacci
sequence. Yeah. Like, those kinds of things. And it's just like, oh. Like, the game, I feel like, made me think of those types of things. Which is good because it's trying to be organic but also geometric at the same time. And I don't know, just that kind of stuff. It draws you into a game, for sure. I think it's funny that you mentioned Ender's Game and the movie. And I must have blocked it out because I hated the movie so much.
Well, the book is great.
The book is so... And I did the huge mistake of reading the book and loving the book and then immediately watching the movie, like the day that I finished the book, it was the worst. So if you ever, if you've watched the movie Ender's Game and you enjoyed it, that's totally fine. If you have read the book and then you watch the Ender's Game, then you're like,
what is going on? I feel like for me, most of the time, if you have some distance between finishing,
you're probably fine. It was my mistake. I totally know that that was my mistake. I had such a visceral negative reaction. Why is Harrison Ford in this stupid movie? But I loved the book. Anyways, I just had to say that about Ender's Game. I think I blocked it. I don't even remember the bug alien guys, the way they look like in the movie. So, anyways, one of the things that was standing out to me, and I think it's an interesting way of thinking about things, is this game really, because you're like entering into this orb, this world, and you can bring things down into that level, but then you can also like come back out. It kind of made me think about like this, the intricacies of the smallness of life. Like if we go down to the molecular level, there's so much going on in this teeny tiny thing. But then also thinking about the vastness of the cosmos and just how huge the world really is. Like we live in this like very kind of defined middle ground area. I mean, it might not even be middle ground, but for us, when you compare those two, it's like middle ground, where it's like they're so small that it's like the cell of life, and then like the protons and the neutrons and all that stuff going on, and then you have like stars and galaxies and universes so far away that when we see them, they're all in one little dot in this night sky.
Yeah, I don't know. Talking about that reminds me of, I believe it's a short story by G.K. Chesterton. I was trying to look it up, but I couldn't find it. But I remember hearing some people talk about it. About the premise of it is like there's two kids and they have a wish, and one wishes to be like tiny, and like I'm thinking, I don't know, when I picture this, I'm visioning like Honey, I Shrunk the Kids.
Yep, that's always what I think.
And then the other kid wishes to be a giant, and the kid who's a giant ends up being really sad because he's bigger than everything. There's like no great adventure for him to go on. He can see everything, but it's, you know, there's no challenge in like climbing a mountain because he can just do it in a couple steps. Versus the little kid who was tiny, just has this vastness of adventure, of things that were mundane when he was normal size, become this, you know, this big imaginative, like he's got things to look up to, things to explore, crevices to, you know, go into, caves to delve, mountains to climb.
Right.
And that could all just be in a living room.
right. You're shrunk down to the size of the carpet. It's just like, this is crazy how big it is.
And I feel like the game kind of does that a little bit. Like feels like you're like sinking deeper into these orbs.
Yep.
Of like, oh wow, what's around the corner. I think that's a really interesting way of just like viewing the world, of like, I feel like we so want to be big, even as little kids, like you have the desire to be big, and having this like learning to enjoy feeling small in certain areas. I feel that a lot as a parent. Of like having kids with their imagination allows you to like recapture a degree of like, oh my, I am able to bring my imagination that back, not to exactly what it was, but like when you're around little kids, they just pull you into that, versus if you're just around adults all day, sometimes the excitement of
things. I think the word that's coming to my mind is wonder. It's just like, oh, there's this wonder. I have a specific memory that's popping into my head of like something that felt way bigger than it really was. And it wasn't even just like a physical bigness, but more like we used to go to, we called it family camp every summer. And so from my earliest memories, every summer we would go to this place on Lake Michigan, and it was always so much fun. And we went on snipe hunts, and like, it was a lot of cool things that we did, play football on the beach with all of our cousins. And when I was little, I just thought it was, I thought we were there for a whole week, but we were there for like 2 days or 3 days, like depending on if it was the long version or the short version. Like we were just there for a weekend, but in my head, we were there for a whole week. Every time we went, it was just like this magical, amazing, huge thing that we did.
I have the same exact memory of it being a week, and mom and dad like, absolutely, we never went for a week. One thing that sometimes is cool is you have so many of your memories that get spoiled as an adult of, like, something you thought was huge, and then you experience it as an adult. You're like, oh, that was not very big. It had been a number of years since we had gone to family camp, and a couple of years back, our family went again.
Was I in Korea at the time?
I believe you were.
Okay.
I
didn't get to go, but we're going to go this summer. That's the plan, at least.
There is this one big hill that was like a dune that led up to a bunch of trails through the woods. And yep. I remember it just being the longest, highest, most exhausting climb. And thinking, coming back, I was probably a kid. It wasn't that big. And we went to do it with, I brought my wife with me, and oh boy, was it big. And it was one of those things where it just made me so happy that it was like, I mean, obviously it's not as big, but like, I was like, it was still like that's a daunting climb. Yeah. Like as an adult, like, I can't, like the kid me was, it was just, I don't know, Mount Everest. But I don't know. It's awesome when you still can get a little bit of that, like, oh, things are big and I feel small. Like,
yeah.
One other aspect of game that we have not talked about at all. I'm curious your thoughts. What did you think about a puzzle game that has boss battles?
I really enjoyed the boss battles. You had mentioned this earlier that the game is not technical. Like, you don't have to be like a good gamer in order to play the puzzle game. These puzzle, like, they were like puzzle bosses, but it was like a big boss that you were like fighting, that you had to utilize the pieces that were on the like the battlefield, like the arena that you entered into, in order to actually defeat the boss. And in the same way that they like just kind of lead you into the next like area of like how you're supposed to like defeat this or like beat the puzzle, like it does that when you walk in and you like you interact with the thing that's going to allow you to defeat the boss. And then it won't let you actually fight the boss until you've done the right thing with that interactable thing, and then the fight begins. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was really clever, like, the ways to, like, the boss fights were fun. They weren't super technical, but they were enjoyable and, like,
visually pleasing.
Very, very much so. So I thought it was great. I don't know that I haven't played a ton of, like, games that I would be like, this is a puzzle game. But I've never had one with, like, bosses mixed in like that.
I thought it was really cool how it was still puzzling.
Yes.
But you felt like you were fighting.
Yeah.
But you weren't like doing, it's not like,
there was some sense of foreboding, like you could be like knocked out of the arena. And it really was, if you got hit once by the boss, you just were taken out of the arena, and then you were able to enter right back in, and now you've learned from your mistake.
But it was not something that I don't think the typical gamer person's like, it's not like you're going, I'm going to bash my head against this boss.
Oh, no, for, no.
40 tries before I can beat it.
You need to learn. You learned it.
And so, and none of them were like crazy, like fast reflex timing aspects, but it was, I thought that was
really good. I had a lot of Zelda vibes when fighting the bosses, because in a lot of Zelda games, when you're fighting the boss, it's like, you need to find the weakness. You need to figure out like, oh, I need to shoot the arrow at the eye or whatever the gimmick from that dungeon was. But I had a lot of those same feelings where it's like, oh, all I need to do is figure out the way that I can attack it or hurt it, and then put myself in a situation where I can do that easy. And so I just think that was great. But it made me think of the boss battles in the Zelda games. Much less technical, even though I don't know that Zelda games are super technical in their boss battles. Some of them are, but that just something popped into my head.
So one of our go-to questions when we're playing a game, and we talk about it afterwards, is like, what do you feel like the game was trying to say?
And this is one of those games that I'm just like, I just enjoyed the puzzle. And then, at the end, this is not, I wouldn't say this, maybe mild spoilers, but I don't think that it actually impacts anybody's play of the game. So I feel comfortable with like talking about it. At the end of the game, when you've like finished, there's like this cutscene that's like very like solar system universe, like there's a sun, and then it looks like the orbs are like rotating around the sun, and then there's this giant like
entity.
Yes, but it's definitely like a bug-ish creature, and so it's like similar to the way that the character that you've been controlling this whole time. And to me it was like, I got no clue what this means. So I'm curious if you had like any insights or
Upon finishing, I was very confused what was going on. I'm like, the game is called Cocoon, so I assumed that I had a metamorphosis into this larger being. but that was about the extent of...
Right.
So I watched a couple videos and read some, like, blog posts on what the heck happened in Cocoon, because I'm like, it bugged me, though. I'm like, this
it seemed
grandiose, but I had no clue what was going on. And a lot of people seem to think that this is some sort of, whether it's a time loop or this ongoing cycle of, like, this entity that releases you to go start your journey, and then you are, like, you know, orchestrating these different planets to be able to run properly. Mm-hmm. And then you spawn the next iteration of the solar system.
Huh.
Whether or not you are both the bug that gets spawned at the beginning and the master bug of the universe or the solar system at the end, I don't really know. And I think there was some debate on that I didn't really care to delve into, but it was like one of those like cool, like there's a lot of cyclicalness. Mm. And I feel like that's very like to the organic nature-y side of things. Of, like there is,
the circle of life,
you know, life and death and rebirth and like,
yeah,
going through the game. And then in my research for that, I discovered that there is like this crazy hidden ending that's just like a different end cutscene. And I was reading the solutions how to do it and was like crazy confused. And I'm like, this is like being spelled out for me like super blatantly. And I was not following it. I'm like, how on earth? Video gamers are some of the craziest people on the planet. That they're like, there's no hint, in my recollection, I'm not sure if you noticed anything that made you think that there was any sort of extra puzzles that you were supposed to be looking for or doing, but some people said, nope, there is something hidden here, I'm going to go do this and figure this out, and whether or not someone figured it out by themselves or if it's a like a community aspect of like theory crafting to figure out how to solve it, yeah. I just think that it's...
You mentioned this to me, and I had never... once noticed anything, and I told you, like, maybe I just, like, did the puzzles. Like
I laughed, because yeah. There's no way you did them.
I didn't look them up at all, so we still don't know. I might have done them. I might be super smart.
I told you about the secret ending it would give you, and you did not see that.
So, or unless I just don't know the difference between the two endings, and that's totally possible. I am pretty brilliant.
Or dumb, depending on how you're looking at it.
So am I the small boy, or am I the giant boy in this scenario?
You sound like you're the giant boy
scenario. I feel like I'm the small boy in this scenario, because...
No, you think you've accomplished everything.
No. There's wonder in the world.
No.
Maybe you're right. I'm so great. I did it all.
The wonder would be, wow, there's so much more for me to learn. There's these greatness I can see in other people and things I can... discover versus I did it. I'm great. That's definitely the giant boy.
Oh, goodness. Anyways, I feel like, unless you have something else to say, I feel like we should jump into ranking this puppy.
I'm very on board for that.
All right. So we have our four sections: skip the line, cut ahead, wait your turn, and end of the line. Where are you wanting to put this game?
I have two places I know I don't want to put it. And that are skip the line and end of the line.
Okay.
But I have such a wide... I feel like I can be persuaded significantly.
Okay. My gut is telling me that it's going to be in wait your turn. But last week, my gut was telling me that it was in wait your turn, that I was the one advocating to put Fury into the end of the line. So, I think we should let it climb.
Okay.
From the bottom of wait your turn and see if it makes its way into cut ahead.
Yeah. Okay. Let's do it.
So the bottom of wait your turn, Golf Story versus Cocoon. I really enjoyed the first time I played Golf Story. It's very charming. I feel like Cocoon is so much more visually pleasing, stimulating in terms of understanding the puzzles. It's not as much of like executing, where Golf Story has that execution aspect of like doing the golf.
Yeah, but the story and Golf Story is also way more on the nose. And it's very blatant, and like a lot of the like fetch questy or like aspects of, which aren't like that bad in the grand scope of games with fetch quests.
Right.
But there's
some of that stuff.
I feel like that Cocoon just had this progression of ramping of like, it was very easy to just like
continue.
Keep playing for until you finished it.
Yeah. I feel like the amount of time that it took me to play Cocoon was much shorter than it took me to play all through Golf Story, where Golf Story had so many times I was like, I'm ready for this part to be over.
If you had the time, I would not be surprised if people get sucked into a beat it in one playthrough.
I did it in two.
That's what I'm saying. Like, it's just, it has such a ramping of progression and such flow and such forward momentum after each puzzle that, like, even if you don't intend to, I feel like you could be like, I'll just do one more little area. I'll just do one more. Like, and all of a sudden you've beaten the game. So I'm above Golf Story.
Okay. This is not going straight up the line, but I actually would like to talk about Chance of Sinnar, which is skipping a couple of things. We can go up to Chance of Sinnar and see where it's at from that. I think that they're just interesting because they're both puzzle games. They're very different types of puzzle games. One's obviously what we're doing here, where it's like manipulating the environment so that you can like progress in your game with Cocoon, whereas Chance of Sinnar is this puzzle game of like understanding this language, like figuring out how to progress in that regard. Between those two puzzle games, because I think that they are both puzzle games.
Mm-hmm.
What are your thoughts?
I feel like Chance of Sinnar has more, like, I clicked with the puzzles, felt a little bit more
satisfying?
Satisfying might be it, but I just think the language aspect of it was very enticing. Yes, enticing is a good way of putting it, but then like, the cultural aspect, there was just a lot of different things going into the puzzle.
Mm-hmm.
While the puzzle, I felt, was enjoyable and fun, I feel like I almost felt like a passive writer in the game. Like, the puzzles felt me, I mean, I felt clever, but I wouldn't say I felt smart.
Mm-hmm.
And it just had this, like this pushing forward effect where you like do a bunch of it. I have a lot of very memorable moments from Chance of Sinnar, and I kind of feel like I had a cool experience with Cocoon, and the things I remember most of the game are not necessarily even the puzzles. It's more of like the way the world made me feel and the way like the visuals in between places like kind of correlated with that. Which I think for some people will hit super hard, and I think they're very comparable games, you know, as far as structure,
I'd say even quality,
but I leaned to, and I think I enjoyed Chance of Sinnar.
I did too. And so kind of to me, this is kind of boxing Cocoon a little bit into under Chance of Sinnar and above Golf Story. But I wanted to talk about Chance of Sinnar because I don't know if it's going to make it all the way up there. But I just think that there's such interesting like comparisons. And I totally agree. I think I enjoyed Chance of Sinnar. It was more of a heady game. I think Chance of Sinnar is more of a heady game, where Cocoon is a more feeling game. Even though you have to like mentally come up with the solution to the puzzle, it's more like you're just like experiencing the puzzle rather than understanding the puzzle. Or maybe not understanding is the right word, but like thinking about the puzzle, it's like, oh, this is just what I need to do. It really does a good job of embracing the organic feel.
Mm-hmm.
The way you play.
I definitely feel like that's the style that the developer goes for. Because we haven't talked about it, but like playing Inside gave me a very similar like forward momentum, like this churning, like I didn't feel like I had a lot of agency, but that wasn't necessarily what the point of it was.
Yeah.
I think it's a very unique, like, they're so different visually.
Yes, very much so.
But upon completing it, it's like, oh, I can definitely see that was the same developer.
Yeah.
So, what remains of Edith Finch?
So, going back down, just above Golf Story, what remains of Edith Finch? I really just want Cocoon to go right past. I don't really have a lot to say about the comparison unless you do.
No. I mean, depending on the day, I could make arguments, but I'm okay with it going past.
Okay. So, the next on the list is Dredge versus Cocoon.
So, this... So basically, the two the next ones we have are Dredge and then Crypt of the Necrodancer. And then above that is Chants of Sennar. And so I had two spots it could be. I could have it be below Dredge, or I would have it be above Crypt. But, I mean, we've talked about that in the past, how that was not necessarily my game. I don't see it falling in between
the two of them.
I think it's either better than both of them, or worse than, or no, above or below. I would call it better or worse. I'm curious. I feel like there are similar, like, the feel of, like, there's, like, a feeling of, like, oppression, and which is weird in Dredge. It's, like, an oppressed exploration. There's just this heaviness on the world.
Right.
And I feel like, to a degree, I felt a similar way in Cocoon, just because of how alien and foreign it was. Like, there was, it's not quite the same. Like, oppression might be a strong way of putting it for Cocoon, but, like, there are very few things where you're just, like, latching onto, oh, this is familiar, this is where I feel comfortable, visually. And
And it's also, there's that mysteriousness of the game that is, like, that gives that kind of vibe. Even though it is interesting because it's so beautiful. It's a very beautiful game. So, like, that is, it seems like that's a purposeful vibe in, like, the mystery and then, like, the weirdness of what you're doing and diving into these different places, and there's no dialogue. It's just, like, this ominous music that's going on, but it's also this beautiful landscape that you're in. I
think that a part of it, what I'm talking about, is, like, there is, like, we didn't go into this, but we could have, I feel like, now that I'm considering it. There's, like, a inevitability in Cocoon. It's, like, almost like a predetermined, you are making this journey, and it's going to happen this one way, but you have to figure out how to make it happen. And I think that is kind of in the oppression I was talking about, of, like, I didn't feel like I had choices. I had puzzles to solve. Mm-hmm. And it was not like, solving this puzzle does not make the next puzzle different. The next puzzle was always going to be what the next puzzle was.
Right. It is hard, because I think I agree with you. We're right in the right spot. Crypt and the Necrodancer, Dredge, Cocoon. Is it go before or after? And I'm totally fine with keeping it on either end of those two things.
I personally think I am leaning towards it below Dredge. Just because I feel like Dredge, to me, feels more like a game. This is an experience, puzzle experience, where I feel like I had choices, I had agency in Dredge. There was collecting, there was, like, these mini games, there's a more complete story to unfold. Dredge is a game that I have replayed and can see myself playing again, and, like, having different aspects of, like, oh, I want to complete catching all of the fish this time. Like, I can have different goals. Whereas I feel like you might have, you know, a time where you want to go through this whole progression. Dredge is a game that you could pick up and play for a little bit and be like, okay, I got my taste of it. Whereas, like, I feel like Cocoon is a game of, like, do you want to experience the whole thing again? Because there's basically no, I'm going to do a little bit.
Right. No, I think I agree with you. I think it should be right below Dredge. So it's in the wait your turn portion of the list. Cocoon is our new number 18. Also, maybe you've noticed that the audio quality is different. I don't actually know if it's going to sound better or not. We got a new, we got an actual microphone, because we've just been recording on our phone this whole time. So hopefully it does sound a lot better.
We currently just have pillows throughout our whole studio space because it was too echoey with the microphone. So we'll also be curious as we increase our production, our
studio budget,
studio quality, get some sound dampering or some soundproofing, how that will change. But hopefully you guys enjoy it.
Yeah, and this might sound really horrible, and to be honest, we're not going to fix it. We're not going to be able to fix it, and we're not going to re-record. So hopefully you had an enjoyable time listening to IndieQ. I'm Bradley.
I'm Paul.
Glad you were here with us.